I want to make a very odd request of us this morning. In fact, I want to beg you to do something, or rather not to do something, that probably at some point in your life others have encouraged you to do. And it may sound strange at first, but please don't make Jesus part of your life. Now, let's think about that for a minute. Wait a minute. What? Please don't make Jesus part of your life. Now, there's a bumper sticker out there that says, "Jesus is my co-pilot." But I saw another one that said, "If Jesus is your co-pilot, you need to switch seats. You're in the wrong place." You see, Jesus doesn't take second place. He only takes first place, or he doesn't take any place at all. There's a song in the songbook, "All of Self and None of Thee." And it's very interesting the way that that song goes. And probably all of us have heard that song at some point in time. But when we think about, and you know what, it may not even be in this. I don't even see it in here. It's under a different name, I'm sure. It's not "All of Self and None of Thee" in here.
None of self.
No wonder I'm looking in the A's instead of the N's. That makes a big difference if you look in the right spot. Sometimes he's helpful to me. Usually he'd confuse me worse, but this time he helped me out. So 695 is that song. And I want us to consider the words of that song for just a moment. And think about the progression that this person makes. It's not that there was never a point where he wanted to make Jesus part of his life, but he didn't stop there. He talks about, at the beginning, it is all of self and none of thee. But he talks about the bitter pain and sorrow that came at that time in his life. If we don't have Jesus in our lives at all, that would be a miserable thing. But he was very proud, proudly said to Jesus, "All of self and none of thee." But then in the second verse, "He found me and I beheld him. He was bleeding on the accursed tree. And my wistful heart said faintly, well, some of self, but I want some of you, some of thee." But then he, day by day, his tender mercy, helping, healing, full and free, brought me lower while I whispered, "Less of self and more of thee." But then ultimately, but look at the difference in verse 1 and verse 4. Verse 1, he's talking about the bitter pain and sorrow that a time could ever be. In verse 4, he's at the opposite extreme. "Higher than the highest heavens, deeper than the deepest sea, Lord, thy love at last has conquered none of self and all of thee." And that's what we're talking about. We don't need to be making Jesus part of our life. We need to be making him all of our life. He needs to be what our life is all about. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, we see that Jesus doesn't want to be part of your life. That was never his plan. And he won't accept that position. Matthew 6:24, he says, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and mammon. He says, you've got to pick. You've got to choose. You can only have one master in your life. And of course, he wants to be that master of your life. But he won't share that position with anyone else. And then in Matthew 22, in verses 37 and 38, Jesus says to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." Everything. See, he doesn't want part. He wants all. He wants to be all or nothing. Think about that sometimes when we think about the Laodiceans and how he condemned them for being lukewarm. He said, I'd rather you hot or cold, make up your mind, but not, don't go part way. Pick one or the other, but don't go part way. I don't want to be part of it. In Luke chapter 14 and verses 26 through 33, Jesus says several things there that indicate there's no room for him to share our hearts and be part of our life. He says, if any man comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother and his wife and his children and his brothers and his sisters and yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. He said, if you don't make me everything, if you don't put me above everything else, number one, no matter what, he doesn't say he won't be a very good disciple. He doesn't say he'll have a hard time being a disciple. He says, that person cannot be my disciple. Just can't happen. We can't have Jesus and as our master and be his follower, be his disciple, if we're putting other things first. You know, the story is told of, you know, we think about those ancient wisdoms of like Socrates and Aristotle and all those guys back there, their wisdom and things. But there was a student that came to one of them and said, I want to study under you. I want to be your disciple, in essence. I want to be a student to you. That's what disciple really means. It's you're a learner of, a student of that person. You study under them. And so this person came, wanted to be a student under this wise teacher. Well, they took him down to the creek, the river, stuck their head under the water, held it there as they're fighting and struggling to get out of that water, get their head back out to the air, and held them down under the water. And finally let them up. And as the fellow's gasping for breath and spitting and sputtering, what did you do that for? And the master teacher said, when you want to learn from me as much as you wanted air just then you're ready. And that's the way it is with Jesus. Until we're ready to give him everything, until we want him to be our master, until we want to be his disciple so much that it's more than we want air when our head's held underwater, we're not going to be able to really please him. Some of the most miserable people I have ever met in my entire life were people who had made Jesus part of their life. And they were trying to live with one foot in the church and with one hand serving God and Christ and with the other foot in the world and the other hand partaking of the sinful things of the world. And they were absolutely miserable. When they were with the people of the church, they felt guilty about the way they were living their life the rest of the time. When they were out there in the world, they knew they shouldn't be doing that, and so they weren't happy doing it. And their friends mocked them and made fun of them because, well, don't you go to church? Aren't you one of those folks? And so they never could fit in either world. And they never were happy in either world. And they were just miserable throughout their whole life, trying to live two different lives in two different worlds. They'd have been happier to pick one or the other. Either one, they'd have been happier if they'd have gone off and become total heathens and done every sinful thing and just rejected Christianity entirely. They'd have been happier in this life. Ultimately, of course, that would have not turned out well for them, would it? But they would have been happier in this life. Of course, ultimately, the best decision they could have made would have been to step out of the world fully into the church, fully into Christ, and be fully part of His world and reject the world. In Galatians 2, in verse 20, Paul describes what we all ought to be feeling and believing and living. He says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, so he's still a human being, he hadn't gone to heaven, he's still here on earth. The life I live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. He says, every step I take, every breath I take, everything I do, every day I wake up, every night when I go to bed, all of it, I'm living by Christ and for Christ, and Christ is living in me. That's total. That is what Jesus wants. He doesn't want to be a part of your life. He wants to be your life. And Paul understood that. Paul grasped that. And one of the things we'll understand is, notice what he said, I am crucified with Christ. Now, obviously, Paul hadn't been crucified. Hadn't really been hung on a cross with Christ. What did he mean? What he meant was, I have died to the world. I am not part of that world anymore. You see, when Saul became Paul, when Saul became a Christian and converted from being a Jewish person who was persecuting the church to being a Christian who was teaching others to follow Jesus, he didn't just go part way. Can you imagine what that would have been like? You know, on Sundays, he's preaching to the Christians, but on the Sabbath day, he's in the synagogue ratting them out. Can you imagine that? You know, on some of the days, he's meeting with the Christians, studying the Bible, talking about Jesus, and on other days, he's hunting Christians and throwing them in jail, maybe getting some of them killed. Can't go part way. Now, sometimes we're happy to go part way, though. We're like, well, I want to keep this little sin. It's just a little sin. It's not a big deal. I want to keep that. Which brings us to the second part of our lesson. First, that Jesus doesn't want to be part of your life. But secondly, Jesus doesn't want part of your life. He doesn't want part of it. Just like Paul, it's all or none. He wants you to go all the way. Matthew 7 and verse 21 through 23, we mentioned this in class. Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father which is in heaven. And then he explains that there were some people who did some of the things. They gave him part of their life. They prophesied in his name. In other words, they taught other people about Jesus. Maybe better than we're doing. Maybe. They even cast out devils. When's the last time you cast out a demon? I've never done that. But they were able to cast out demons in his name. And they did many wonderful works in his name. But he said, I'm going to profess to you, I never knew you. Depart from me, you evil workers. Working evil. Well, wait, how were they working evil? Because, yeah, they were doing those things, but they weren't giving him everything. They weren't giving him their whole life. He's not happy with part of it. You see, Christianity, following Christ, becoming a part of Christ's body, is not like getting a job. Most of us are familiar with what it's like to have a job. We have work time and we have time off from work. And the job doesn't get to tell us what we do with our time off as long as it's not something that's damaging to who we work for, right? When we take our time off, we do what we want to do with our time off. We go where we want to go. Eat or sleep or watch TV or do, you know, we can do what we want to do with our time where we're not on the clock for the job. But Christianity's not that way. There's not a punch in, punch out with Christianity. I've heard people talk about, you know, I'm going to lay my Christianity down and whoop you. And well, you lay your Christianity down, you're liable not to ever pick it up again. May not be able to find where you laid it. But there are people, you know, they wear their Christianity on Sunday like a suit coat. And when the suit coat comes off, Christianity comes off. That's not what Jesus wants. And Jesus won't accept that. See, being a servant for Christ, it's not just a full-time job. It's a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year job, and 366 days on leap year. It's all the time. We're Christians. Another song that we sing, and I wonder how many people who sing this song every Sunday, there's probably people somewhere that we didn't sing it today, but somebody somewhere probably did. I guarantee it. All to Jesus I surrender. I wonder how many people are lying when they sing that song. They're saying with their lips, all to Jesus I surrender, but in their heart they're saying, you know, God, you can't have this part. Jesus, I'm not going to give you this. You can have this part, but not that part. Unfortunately, in our society, and I think the fact that Christianity is kind of falling out of favor is in some ways a good thing for the church and for Christianity. Because I think in the past few decades, we've kind of had a situation where there are a lot of people who practice what's known as dilettantism. You say, what on earth is that? I went through the dictionary one time, looked up all the words that end in ism just to see what they all meant. But I wrote some articles about them. But this particular one, dilettante. You ever heard of a dilettante? Well, this is somebody who does something just for amusement. They live to just enjoy themselves, in essence. But they take up an activity because, well, I thought it'd be fun. And I think there was a lot of people that were going to church as an act of amusement. It was just something to do. Fun place to go and meet people, and, you know, guys go there looking for a girlfriend. That kind of thing. Of course, now a lot more of them go to the bar looking for a girlfriend. I will tell you, you find better girls at church than you do at the bar usually. That's the way that works. I say usually because, you know, sometimes the girls that were at the bar on Saturday night are at church on Sunday. So, you know, but you know, usually you find better people in that sort of, but sometimes people are just there, you know, they're just hanging out, they're just having a good time, but they're not really living it. And they don't really mean it. And they don't really love God. Of course, there are a lot of things that we do for amusement. There are a lot of things we do to relax. Hunting and fishing it may be crocheting or knitting or, you know, whatever. There's all sorts of things that we do just for amusement, just to entertain ourselves. Maybe reading books or watching TV. And that's okay. But Christianity is not an activity to be taken up for amusement. It's a matter that's much more serious than life or death. It's a matter of eternal life or death. It's much more important than that. And when Jesus says, you have to forsake all, you know, hate even your own life and take up your cross and follow after me, that doesn't sound like somebody who's doing something for amusement, does it? Not at all. So I want to beg us this morning, please don't make Jesus a part of your life. And please, don't try to give Jesus part of your life. He doesn't want it. Are you trying to make Jesus a part of your life? Or are you trying to become part of His life? Doesn't work that way. He won't accept that. Are you trying to give Jesus the parts of your life that you won't miss? Or are you giving Him everything just like He gave you everything? You see, when Jesus came to earth, he didn't just give us part of his life, did he? He gave us all of his life. He gave us every waking moment completely sinless. And then he gave us his death. If you haven't given Jesus all of your life, you need to decide to do that today. We don't know how long we may have. Jesus will eventually become frustrated with us like he did with the church at Laodicea. He warned them, if you don't straighten up, you either get hot or get cold. If you keep staying lukewarm, I am going to spit you out. I'm going to vomit you up. You're not going to be part of me at all. Don't let that happen to you. Make Jesus all of your life. There's another song that we sing. He is my everything. He is my all. Is he your everything today? If not, make him your everything. Whether you've never obeyed the gospel and maybe Jesus isn't even in your life, you need to get there. You need to get him in your life and you need to get in his life. But if you are a Christian but you've tried to be a partway Christian, you've made Jesus part of your life because that's what people say, oh, you know, come make Jesus part of your life. You'll have a better life. You have a better life when you make Jesus everything. If he's your everything, then your life will be better. And particularly your eternal life will be better. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation at this time for any reason, please do so as we stand and sing.